over at Popeyes or Popeyes in Quorum, the Rhythm Kings will be appearing. And that is the short list for Sunday, July 26th. And if you'd like to get your band listed, you can contact us at Scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook.
And apologies from WUSB Stony Brook for playing the wrong date. I just assumed that it was Sundays, or actually Saturdays, that it would go a few days more, but it didn't. Okay, well, I don't know what's going on tonight, but we don't know either because we don't have a concert billboard for today. What we do have for today, though, is another edition of Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manny Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Was that really Spiney's last show? We'll see. This is my last show until I get back from wherever it is I'm going next week. Don't know what's going to be happening. Don't know what you'll be hearing. Probably some audio from Tour Camp, which happened earlier this month, and probably some audio from wherever it is I wind up going. But it won't be live. It'll be pre-recorded for the next several weeks or so. So tonight's your last chance to call in live and feedback and all that kind of thing. I was actually trying to do some history research before the show, like immediately before the show, because someone mentioned to me, "Hey, Emmanuel, do you know it's the 25th anniversary of the one of the first mass killings in American history?" I don't know if people think I just mark these events, but. Yeah, remember the McDonald's shooting? If you were around in 1984, that's when there was a mass, you know, the things we take for granted now, don't even make page one of the newspapers, where maybe 6 or 10 or 20 people get killed by some maniac with a gun. It was a fairly novel thing back then. Didn't happen all that often. In fact, this was apparently the first time. I made the mistake right before the show of going into Google News and typing in McDonald's shooting. I figured, you know, I'd find the story, but, you know, I found Two charged in McDonald's shooting on Wednesday afternoon. Someone else admitted to shooting his girlfriend at a Little Rock McDonald's. Every single story here is about somebody else shooting somebody else in a McDonald's. Yeah, here's some cops that shot somebody in a McDonald's. A 9-year-old has a bullet in his head he's going to McDonald's as sympathy for being shot in the head. Okay, never mind that. All kinds of stories about being shot in McDonald's. Wow. But the one that matters, I mean, they all matter, obviously, but the one that history will judge is the one that took place on July 18th, 1984. Yes. And that was in San Diego. And how many people? I'm looking up this information right now. This guy came in with a long-barreled Uzi, a pump-action shotgun, and a handgun. And wound up killing 22 people, including himself. That was a turning point right there. Incredible. And, yeah, you know, it's, I don't know why it's caught on exactly. I guess people read the news and they say, wow, like, I could do that too. And, of course, it gets easier and easier to get your hands on weapons. And the weapons get more and more advanced. You can take out more people quicker. And you add all these things together and you basically have a recipe for disaster. And, you know, also, we were on the air back then in 1984 during a show called The Ministry of Truth. And, in fact, I was just looking up the summary. The show is online, and we mentioned, or a listener actually called us to say that Burger King was flying its flags at half staff because of yesterday's McDonald's massacre. Yeah, so we did a show the day after the McDonald's massacre on July 19th, 1984. Pretty incredible. And you can hear that too if you go to www.2600.com/TMOT. That stands for the Ministry of Truth. Or just look for the Ministry of Truth on the main page. And you'll hear some history. Some things we were talking about way back then. See how much things have changed. Or not changed. Well, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. And of course, I think the major issue is going to be that little incident that took place up in Cambridge. Put our own little spin on it. See what our listeners think as well. Because that's important to us. And again, it's our last live show for a while, so it would be good to have some kind of back and forth on that and any other subject that might come up as well. It's getting to be that time of year I don't like, where it's hot and muggy, and I had to spend all day today running around doing things in un-air-conditioned places, so I wasn't in a very good mood most of the day. It's good to be going away. Good to be going someplace maybe a little bit cooler. I like when the weather changes, you know, I like diversity, but this is the time that I complain more than any other time of the year. Okay, let's take a look at some of the things going on around the world. Well, as long as we're on the subject of shooting, how about this? This is a feel-good story for everybody. An Asheville firefighter, where's Asheville? Somebody know where Asheville? We get all these submissions. And the people who write them assume that we know where they are. Okay, well, there's a place called Asheville someplace. And it's from a newspaper called the Citizen Times. And it's in a place called Buncombe County. You know, none of this helps. None of this is very... an area code, a zip code, something? No? All right, well, let's just imagine this could be any place USA. So we'll just say an any-place firefighter charged with attempted first-degree murder after witnesses said he shot at a bicyclist has made his first appearance in Buncombe County District Court. Charles Alexander Diaz, 42 years old, apparently fired at the Asheville man after arguing with him about riding his bike on the busy road with his 3-year-old child in a bike seat behind him. If you want to be a spectator in this case, it's going to start being heard on August 17th, but you have to figure out where Buncombe County Superior Court is. But here's the story. Diaz was driving his car off Interstate 40. Ah, there's a clue for you. Interstate 40. We don't get that in New York. You get that down south. So I suspect this might be maybe in the Carolinas somewhere. Maybe. At exit 55. So you have all the information you could possibly need to find where this is. At about 11:24 a.m. on Sunday, when he saw Alan Ray Simons and his wife riding bikes up the road with Simons' three-year-old son behind him in a bike seat. According to Ashley Police Captain Tim Splain, he decided he needed to tell them he thought it was unsafe that they would do that and have their child out there in an area where they had a lot of traffic. So, Diaz stopped his car and confronted Simons near 1360 Tunnel Road. Oh yeah, we're drawing a map for you. You can find this place very easily now. 1360 Tunnel Road. When Simons began to walk away, actually, when he'd been riding away, he was on the bike. All right, this isn't... Maybe he was walking his bike? Not really sure. Anyway, when he began to walk away, Diaz shot at him, Splain said. The bullet blew a hole through the outer lining of Simons' helmet and went straight through both sides of the helmet, but he was not hit. Simons, and along with others who witnessed the incident, then took the time to write down Diaz's license plate number and called police. If I just got shot through the head, through the bicycle helmet, and just went out the other side, I'm not sure at what point I'd be able to get a pen and paper and write down someone's license plate. I'd just be hightailing it on. I know, wife and kid and everything. No, forget it. I'm just out of there. That's it. No more of this. But this guy kept his cool and wrote down the license plate number, and so did some other people. And police have charged Diaz with one count of attempted first-degree murder. A matter of an inch or less, says Splain. Explains Splain. In either direction would have meant that the bullet could have easily killed Mr. Simons. Now, Diaz was not under the influence of any drugs or alcohol at the time of the shooting, has no prior criminal record. Do you know what he is? Do you know what he is, folks? I'll tell you what he is. He's one of those people that you hear about so often that are sane, rational individuals who carry firearms with them to stay safe, to stay protected. This is one of these statistics that you don't hear about. These kinds of things happen all the time. We hear about it every day in the newspaper, somebody blowing their stack and shooting somebody for no particularly good reason. People crack up all the time. But this is a case where somebody cracks up who has access to a weapon of death, right, on their own person. And why? Because we've said that's okay. We said it's perfectly okay to walk around in the public squares, in the malls, in the schools, with these weapons that are portrayed as only being used for defensive capabilities. And you know what? Whoever can invent a gun that can only be used for defense will be honored as a god. But unfortunately, the guns don't know any better, and they just get used whenever the person handling them decides to use them. And oftentimes that happens when somebody just loses their temper. And we've all lost our tempers. Think about the worst thing you ever done when you lost your temper. Might have been breaking something in half. Might have been destroying something that somebody else valued. Or might have been saying horrible things. Certainly something we wish we could take back. And in most cases, you probably can. In most cases, you can probably say, I'm really sorry, I was such a jerk, and I'll make it up to you somehow. Hard to make it up to somebody when you fire a bullet at them, especially if you hit them. That's why it's not generally a good thing to have such amazing power so close to you at all times. Now, if you're in a position where you have to lead a battalion over a hill or something like that, or you're a police commando or somebody that requires access to weapons of death, which is what they are, then you're expected to get the right amount of training. You're expected not to be in a bad mood at that particular time. You're expected to have things under control. Special situations. It should be a special situation, waving around the gun. Don't you think it should be reserved for special occasions? Not something you do every day. Every day should be when you walk around with your hands swinging carelessly by your sides. Not a care in the world. That should be a normal day. We have to get back to that. Anyway, the guy's a firefighter, too. I mean, that's usually somebody that's fairly responsible. Somebody who understands what's dangerous and what's not dangerous. Somebody who's able to make up for other people who are a lot less careful insofar as lighting fires and doing things that get them in the hospital. Firefighters and cops, we expect more from them. But everybody's human. So we're fools if we believe that they're not going to act like humans occasionally. All right, interesting case, though. Now, speaking of acting like humans, that's one thing. Then there's acting like barbarians. And please just let me get this out, because this is something that means a lot to me, and it has an effect. There are some people, not in this country, thank God for that, not in this country, for now we're spared, but in other countries, one in particular, some people apparently think that it's acceptable behavior to pick up a smart car and throw it in a canal. And that's what's happening in Holland right now. In Amsterdam. It's a new craze where vandals toss parked smart cars into the city's canals. It's called smart tossing. Happens over the weekend, usually. You can see youths out on a rampage around the town just picking up smart cars and tossing them over their shoulders into the canals below. Now, the newspaper over there, called The Telegraph, claims the police did not want to publicize this because they're afraid of copycat incidents. But police officers are paying extra attention to Amsterdam's canals, especially during the weekends. Now, the smart cars, as you well know, are small enough to be parked with head or tail pointing to the water. One man who parked his smart car that way said police woke him with the message that his car had been pushed into the canal. It's a lot easier when you just roll it into the canal, I suppose. Several weeks ago, the same thing happened to my companion's smart, said Casper DeJong. In both cases, the smart was declared a total loss. It's not funny, Spiny. It's not funny at all. Oh, boy. I'm going to have to go over to Amsterdam and investigate this, obviously. There's no question about it. But anyway, there usually is a guardrail, a little guardrail that helps prevent cars from taking a dip, but the smart car is small enough to be lifted and tossed over that guardrail. Now, it's not clear how many smart cars have perished into the canals, but an employee of Smart Center Amsterdam confirmed the company has recently been confronted with it a number of times. In recent years, vandals have also targeted other small vehicles, including scootmobiles and tiny cars from the Cantra brand. I don't know if you've ever seen those. Those are the little tiny, really tiny red cars that they have over in Amsterdam that really can just fit one person. And although I heard reports of somebody who drove one all the way from Amsterdam to the border of Poland, which is amazing because I think they only go about 30 miles an hour, but you can park them on sidewalks and park them everywhere. And, yeah, you can probably throw two in the canal at the same time. That's how small they are. But, yeah, there's people doing that. And those vehicles are used by handicapped people and people with limited mobility. So it's not very nice. They call it an urban version of cow tipping. Yeah. I don't think it's funny. It's not just because I own a smart car. But it's about basic auto rights, you know. Don't throw a car into the water. Well, the owner can throw the car into the water, I suppose, but or if you're chasing somebody and, you know, one of those high-speed off-the-bridge type things. But this, no, this is just not right. All right. Well, we had that show last week, a controversial show where we were talking about all kinds of unacceptable language and when it's acceptable and when it's not acceptable. Said the N-word a number of times. Yeah. I was expecting all kinds of retributions for that, but, you know, everybody I talked to about it afterwards understood exactly what the point was. That language is something that has power. And you can't condemn somebody for expressing a particular incident in a strong way. You can condemn somebody for basically putting somebody down, using demeaning language, castigating an entire race or religion or nationality. But that's very different. That's very different from banning something altogether and calling for more bans. And in a related story, a woman has been arrested in Mexico over the deaths of two midget wrestlers, twin brothers, discovered in a hotel room last month. Now, we're not supposed to say that word. How are we supposed to say that, then? Two little people wrestlers? That doesn't make any sense. There's got to be a better way to say that. The 65-year-old woman denies the charges. Police said they were searching for her alleged accomplice known as the Fat One. And that probably isn't right either. You probably shouldn't be calling people that. Anyway, the wrestlers are part of the popular Lucha Mini wrestling circuit. The brothers Alejandro and Alberto Perez Jimenez, 35 years old, fought under the names El Espectrito II, the Little Ghost, and La Parquita, Little Death. Many professional Mexican wrestlers wear masks as part of their adopted characters. Prosecutors say the suspect met the two wrestlers in the center of Mexico City and agreed to go back with them to their hotel room. There, it is alleged, she and her friend put eye drops into the brothers' alcoholic drinks. Surveillance cameras show the two women leaving the hotel. The suspect held by police was allegedly traced to calls made on one of the wrestlers' mobile phones. The prosecutors say, and this is interesting, female gangs have been drugging men to rob them. The suspect and her accomplice, they allege, failed to take into account the wrestler's small stature and gave them too big a dose. Yeah, midget wrestlers in the news. It's what they're called. It's what they call themselves. And it's part of the news, so how else do you report it? You have to be careful not to censor yourself too much. Okay, I guess we'll talk about the main issue, the main story. The main story being what happened up in Cambridge with the Cambridge Police Department and with President Obama and all kinds of interesting little tidbits there. Well, first of all, when I saw what Obama said, I was blown away. I was amazed by what he said, actually saying that cops acted stupidly rather than simply standing behind them blindly, like Rudolph Giuliani might do. You know, you can take the worst possible scenario. You know, a cop shooting somebody 41 times for holding up their wallet, and somebody's saying, well, we have to wait till all the facts come in. No, we can't pass judgment too quickly. Probably shouldn't have happened, which is about as strong as they're going to get. It's nice to see somebody actually get angry, saying this never should have happened. Now, for those of you who might have been in a coma, or somewhere where you haven't been keeping updated on the news. We're talking about Professor Henry Gates, who is Harvard's prominent scholar of African-American history. Now, he was arrested at his own home on July 16th. Arrested for disorderly conduct as police investigated a report of a possible break-in at his own house. Now, that charge was almost immediately dropped. The Cambridge Police Department said the incident was regrettable and unfortunate. Now, I've seen a lot of coverage of this, read a lot of opinion pieces, and the people who are critical of the professor and supportive of the police, which coincidentally is every single policeman that says anything about this, and that's part of the problem, they all say that he overreacted. He was rude to the policeman. He should have treated him with more respect. And all of that indicates that you have to basically bow down to somebody when they come to your own home and be polite and be nice, or else you're going to face all kinds of problems. And you have to wonder, how many times does something like this happen where it's not a prominent scholar of African-American history who's the victim and we never hear about it? How many times do you think cops have come up to somebody in their own home and demanded that they stand outside and prove that they live there? How would you react to that? Think about it. You're in your own home right now. Cop knocks on the door and says, "Step outside." I mean, right there. Someone coming to your door and demanding that you step outside. Now, do you have to do that? Do you even know what your rights are? Do you have to do that? Does the policeman need a search warrant? Can you decline his request and close the door? Do the police have the right to come into your home uninvited? These are all things that I get wavering answers on every day. But I think most people would not be entirely happy with that kind of situation playing out. Now, if things are done in a polite manner, cop comes up to the door and says, "Sorry to bother you. I had a report that somebody might have broken into this house. Have you, you know," burglars tend not to answer the door. I don't know if you've noticed this. But if you knock on the door that's of a house that's being burglarized, usually they run out the back door. Or they don't look like they live there. They've got one of those sacks over their shoulder, and, you know, the things that cover their eyes, and they're wearing that plaid thing that burglars tend to wear. Yeah, you know, usually they don't act like somebody who lives in the home. The interesting thing also is that the cop claims that he was looking for two black men, and it turns out now that was never part of the phone call. Wasn't part of the original phone call of the neighbor who saw somebody trying to get into a home. It turned out to be the person who lived there, having trouble getting into his own door. But she did not say that there were two black men. The cop said this, and apparently nobody told him this. The other odd thing is he claims to have talked to the person who made the phone call, and the person who made the phone call says they never talked to the cop. So somebody's not telling the truth here. It's getting kind of weird. Listen to this story, just kind of a variation on a theme. This comes from the New York Times. Ralph Medley, retired professor of philosophy and English, who is black, remembers the day he was arrested on his own property, a rental building in Hyde Park, where he was doing some repair work for tenants. That's in Illinois. A concerned neighbor had called the police to report a suspicious character. And that was not the first time Mr. Medley said he had been wrongly apprehended. A call Mr. Medley placed to 911 several years ago about a burglary resulted in the police showing up to frisk him. "But I'm the one who called you," he said, remembers pleading with the officers. Like countless other black people around the country, Mr. Medley was revisiting his encounters with the police as a national discussion about race and law enforcement unfolded after the arrest of Professor Gates. He said the incident was a disappointing reminder that for all the racial progress the country seems to have made with President Obama's election, little has changed in the everyday lives of most people in terms of race relations. It's all about institutional racism. And that seems to be what we're seeing here. Now, this person says, Al Vivian, a diversity consultant in Atlanta, he says it is unwise for anyone of any race to raise their voice to a law enforcement officer. But the result at the end of the day is that this was a man who violated no law, was in his own house, the top academic star at the top academic school in the nation, and he was still taken away and arrested. Now, as I'm sure we all heard, President Obama said he thought the Cambridge police had acted stupidly in the arrest. And Mr. Medley says, I think it's worse than stupid. I think it was mean-spirited and ill-intended. Now, the commissioner of the Cambridge, Massachusetts Police Department said last Thursday he deeply regrets the arrest of prominent black Harvard University professor Henry Louis Gates Jr., but stands by the procedures followed by his department. I believe Sergeant James Crowley acted in a way that is consistent with his training at the department and consistent with national standards of law enforcement protocol, Commissioner Robert Haas said, referring to the officer who made the July 16th arrest at the professor's home. I do not believe his actions in any way were racially motivated. Okay, even if they weren't racially motivated, does that make it right? In a statement, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, there's so many different associations, they expressed disappointment at President Obama's remarks. Police chiefs understand that it is critically important to have all the facts in any police matter before drawing conclusions or making any public statement, said said Russell Lane, association president, in a public statement. Yeah. Well, you don't have all the facts either, yet you're blindly supporting the cop. Now, people in that police department are saying that Obama insulted police officers everywhere. How did he insult police officers everywhere? He's insulting the ones that did something stupid. And if every single police officer in this country stands up for all cops whenever they do anything, then okay, yeah, they're all stupid. Because that's wrong. Blind allegiance is always wrong. Now, the cop in question, James Crowley, said he would not apologize for his actions. That apology will never come from me as Jim Crowley. It won't come from me as sergeant in the Cambridge Police Department, he said on a radio interview, WEEI in Boston. Whatever anybody else chooses to do in the name of the city of Cambridge or the Cambridge Police Department, which are beyond my control, I don't worry about that. I know what I did was right. I have nothing to apologize for. Well, Mayor of Cambridge has already apologized to the professor for what happened to him. And I just find it hard to follow the logic of anybody who thinks that this is the right way to act, if you're a cop. And I think this also points out a large number of the problems that we face with cops, where they overreact. They overreact. When a cop overreacts, it's a lot worse than when a civilian overreacts. Let's say Professor Gates was overreacting, he was being rude, that he was saying all kinds of nasty things to this guy. It was obvious he lived there. He had shown identification that proved he lived there. All the cop had to do was say, sorry for bothering you, and walk away. Yeah, you know what? He would have been insulted by what the guy was saying, but he would have been taking the higher road. And that's what they're paid to do. And that's only assuming that everything they say is right, that he was completely out of control and yelling and screaming and saying all kinds of horrible things. That doesn't necessarily fly with me. I don't think that's exactly what was happening. I think there's probably a bit of overreaction on both sides, and I've seen this a million times with cops where they basically order you to do something, and if you don't do exactly what they say, like you're in the military or something, then they basically do whatever they feel like doing. I witnessed this myself at Union Square, actually. At the RNC 2004 one of the rallies that was being held at Union Square. It wasn't even a demonstration. It was just like a rally where people were holding signs and things like that. And this was before I got arrested for standing on a street. I won't even get into that. That's a whole other story. But this story was just somebody who was being yelled at by a cop, being told to move over there in a very rude tone. And you know what this guy did? This guy said he wanted to know that officer's name and badge number. Because both of those bits of information were not evident. They were hidden. They weren't on display like they usually are. That's something that I noticed, and I thought that was kind of odd. So he asked this, and immediately he was arrested just for asking this. Now, they're saying in this particular case that Gates was asking repeatedly for this guy's name and number and was not being given that information. So it's no surprise to me that the cop got angry and said, well, I'm going to show who's boss here. And that's what happens. That's what happens when you get into an argument with somebody who has a lot of power. So, the question tonight, I guess, for our callers at 631-632-9872, was President Obama wrong to say that the cops acted stupidly? Were the cops wrong? Was the professor wrong? Are we wrong to be even talking about this? And how would you react in a similar situation? The whole thing's fascinating because it just shows so many different perspectives of the same society. And while Obama backtracked a bit, I'm happy to say he did not apologize. He did not say, oh, I'm sorry for saying what I said. He said my words might not have helped very much. They might have added to a bad situation. But I'm happy to see he didn't say that he was wrong to say they acted stupidly. It's the epitome of stupidity to do something like this. You arrest people when there's no other alternative, when they pose some kind of a threat to the people around them. Not when they're by themselves in their homes, and their only crime is that they're rude to a cop. That, to me, is a cop out of control. And this guy might have the best record in the world. Yeah, he led the racial sensitivity class or whatever. I keep hearing this. Fine. But in this particular case, he did not handle his authority very well. Should have taken that high road. Okay, let's hop into delay. And again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. And we'll be back in just a couple of seconds.
This is Tiger Den 1. And you're listening to WSB Stony Brook.
And here we are, in delay. Our phone number, 631-632-9872. Your calls are welcome, as always. Oh, wow, look at that. This is a hot topic, isn't it? Every single line is lit. My goodness, let's take a call. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Hi, something not identical but similar happened to me.
Okay.
I ended up getting a ticket for disorderly conduct. I did absolutely nothing wrong.
What was the situation?
I also want to say that the show you had last week, I'm absolutely livid over that show.
Okay, well, do you want to talk about this show or do you want to talk about last time?
The next time I'll talk to you, I'll discuss that, but we can stick with Gates for now.
Yeah, stick with Gates for now.
I was walking down the street in the middle of the night, and these two guys were there, and I knew both of them. And there was something peculiar going on. I couldn't quite figure it out. One of them seemed real scared and leery, and so I said, let me get out of here. And a cop car sped on the scene real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my presence made one of the guys that they were trying to trap take off and go through the backyard. And so the cop got real angry that I blew his setup. They probably had a warrant on the guy or something. No big criminal type guy or anything.
Right.
And he got physical with me. And I got, and it was just one, it was two cops. One sat in the car. He didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. He didn't even look to see what was going on. So that's something that happens sometimes. It's one creep in the car. But mm-hmm. the other guy is not going to do anything to say, hey, cut it out. And he's going to support whatever the guy
of
says.
Of course, yeah. A guy can falsify records and everything. They'll stand behind them, and that's
don't
just
care.
Wrong.
They don't care. Now, I'm sure if there was a black cop with the white cop at Gates' house.
You know, this transcends race because...
Let me just say, he'll say, I support him,
mm-hmm.
even if he has had similar things happen to his relatives.
Right.
And he knows exactly what went on was inappropriate. I think it's arrogance and hubris. We have elevated them because of fear of crime to such a level of... In black communities, they're like... a garrison of the Roman Empire in some far-flung corner of the empire, and they feel like they can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's precisely the sort of behavior you saw there. And my story didn't get in the paper.
Right, and many stories don't. And, you know, you mentioned the power that they have and the fear that they instill. I think we give them that power because we just simply stand back and let it happen and say yes.
What happened there was Obama was right. It was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That was a case of them being unprofessional.
Right, exactly.
If you go into an emergency room and you spit in a doctor's face,
mm-hmm.
he's still going to stitch you up, and they'll all try to say something to calm you down and all of that. But their attitude is, and I saw a black cop on some TV show, a young guy, say, well, you got to show respect. So automatically, they come from the point of view that they're superior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that causes problems with a lot of people.
I was walking down the street once, and I saw a cop talking to a guy on a bike, and I could tell the guy had been in trouble a lot. I kind of know him. So he's, you know, being all sycophantic with the cop. Nothing, man, screw that. And I made a left turn because I don't want you asking me questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to talk to you. I didn't do anything. I don't have anything... any contraband on me, I haven't broken any laws, I don't have a record, none of that crap.
Right.
But this guy swung around the other side and snuck up on me and blew his horn and really startled me.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, you don't have any business with me. And this is how Gates talked to him. You know what I'm saying?
Right, you didn't bow down and kiss his ass, which
yeah.
is what they want you to do.
And he jumped out the car and said, we could do this the hard way. Or we could do this the regular way. I say, so am I supposed to cower in fear?
Yeah.
Is that what you want? And I think it was only one cop. If it was two, I would have been more careful.
Mm-hmm. You do have to be careful because they can get away with anything, including murder.
I wouldn't have done it. But I think there's something about the way I said it. And I look a lot younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But when I finally relented and didn't tell him my age and stuff, he said, boy, you look really young. So we're really, in a sense... He's saying that the young guys are fair game. But I've seen them humiliate and be unfair to the grown men. You know, I'm talking about tax-paying, law-abiding citizens.
Well, yeah, they shouldn't be able to do it to anybody. Obviously, tax-paying or not tax-paying.
They shouldn't be able to do it to anybody.
Young, old, black, white, it shouldn't matter. They should treat people with respect.
They should be treated
with respect, too. But they don't have the right to come down on you hard if you don't respect them.
See, I've watched some of those cop shows on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where you could see that if there wasn't a camera there.
Yeah.
They would lose it.
You're talking about Cops, the actual documentary show.
This time when
yeah.
even though the camera's there, they're just on the
mm-hmm.
they're on the verge of losing it anyway. And sometimes they'll make sarcastic remarks and mock
yeah,
the person.
Just the contempt they treat people with. The assumption that the people that whose homes they're going to are scum of the earth and they're just drunk all the time. And they put them down immediately before knowing anything about the case. And that sort of gets transferred
that's
to the viewer.
You know, that's not news for me.
Right. Listen, sir, I've got a full switchboard, so I'd like to move on, but thanks very much for your call.
I'll talk to you about your last show.
Please do.
Let me
Please
just
do.
Say about Gates.
Yes.
That I've seen a lot of some things he's done on television, and he always seems to me to be very careful about not upsetting white people.
Yeah, no, he's the voice of reason.
His wife is white or something.
The voice of reason from all accounts I've heard. And this is a guy I just got back from,
well,
I think 14 hours
saying,
flying.
Whenever, like Alan Keyes got arrested for trying to crash something Obama was doing,
mm-hmm.
they were running against each other. And he started saying, this is how you treat black men. I think Gates is like that, too. He's suddenly black when the police
mm-hmm. yeah.
Affront quick, you know, are rude and arrogant with you, because I haven't heard him talk about this kind of stuff at all.
Okay. Listen, thanks for your call. We'll talk later. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up, please.
Good evening, Mario. This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. How you doing? You got an interesting connection again. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to mention the firefighter person shooting bicyclist thing.
Okay.
If you didn't. But since you did, I just wanted to ask, what happens if this firefighter decides that there weren't enough fires in town lately and he hasn't been earning his food and beverage monies, so he decides to start up a few fires? What happens then? I mean, this...
Yeah, well, I can't really understand what you're saying, but I think you're asking what happens if a firefighter abuses his trust and does something he's not supposed to do. And he shouldn't get any special treatment. He shouldn't get the blind support of the fire department. You know, I don't think the fire department is like the police department. I don't think they blindly support anybody who's a fireman.
And the Gates Affair, if I may call it that.
Uh-huh.
Well, last I heard this, President Obama called the police person and asked them to come to the White House and have a beer with him.
Yeah, you know, and that seems like a good idea, to bring the people together and try to discuss things. That's in keeping with his demeanor. So, yeah, I think the only good can come from this. We need to talk these things through. But I do think that what he said was accurate, and he should have gotten angry, and a lot of people have gotten angry. It doesn't mean you can't forgive. It doesn't mean you can't discuss. It doesn't mean you can't try and reach the other person. I'm sick of people condemning the other side and just, you know, cutting themselves off and not having any kind of contact or conversation. We need this dialogue.
Cheers from the IRC channel of the wall on 2600.net.
Okay, I'd like to join that channel someday. Thanks, thanks for your call, and hope to see you sometime.
Have fun.
All right. That's our caller from Bulgaria talking to us live, I assume from Bulgaria, on a crazy phone. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, how's it going? Is this Clear Cut University?
Is this Clear Cut University? Do you mean the university that chops down all the trees?
That's right, yeah. The one that we pay all the money to do all the open space studies to all the academics, and then they just go and clear all the trees anyway.
Sounds like you have an agenda.
Yeah.
All right, well...
Not at all. You know, hearing what you said, I totally understand it. Both sides of the situation. Ultimately, what you have is emotions always get the better of us, no matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, Mr. Gates had a belligerence by being, you know, do you know who I am, blah, blah, blah. And the officer, you know, of course, didn't care who he was. He was there on a call. He was concerned about his own safety at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when anybody comes at you with a certain amount of arrogance, I mean, you just counteract it with more arrogance of your own, because we can all be pig-headed and stubborn.
Well, here's the thing, okay? This is what I don't get. If the cop just knocks on his door and somebody answers the door, why would they be belligerent by default? Wouldn't they be belligerent after having heard something like step out of the house or something, you know, a command like that? I think that's where the belligerence might have started.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, not having been there, and that's where I feel President Obama was incorrect in interjecting anything, because he wasn't there, did not know the circumstances, nor the finer details of the...
Well, I mean, the details at that moment were that this guy was arrested in his own home after proving that he lived there, so why was he arrested?
I think he was arrested getting, you know, all out of hand, because obviously...
But you can be rude to somebody inside your own home. You know, it's not a crime. You can't get arrested
for
that.
That's not what I think he was arrested for at that point. I think he was arrested for disorderly conduct.
In his own home? How is it disorderly conduct?
I experienced the same circumstance. My alarm went off at my house, and I went there to reset it. And when I had gotten there, at the same time, I walked in. The officer arrived behind me because the central station had called him. So,
what, your alarm clock went off and the cop came into your house?
License to explain who I was, and yet, you know, he had to challenge this set of circumstances. And, you know, I would want that.
But, I'm not following your story here. You say your alarm clock went off. And
no, not my alarm clock. My alarm on my home.
Oh, a burglar alarm. Okay.
A burglar alarm. So I went to the house to shut the alarm off and see what the situation was. And
okay.
As I arrived, maybe a minute after, the police arrived, because they're called by a central station from the alarm company. They call the police for you to tell them to respond to your address.
Right.
So I had to, you know, explain my situation, but I didn't have my driver's license, couldn't prove who I was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I worked it out with the officer, but I was understanding of his situation, whereby I had to prove that I belonged there.
Right, but you knew from the start that there was a burglar alarm, so you already had that knowledge.
Yes.
I suspect in this case...
A woman called up and said she saw two men, one Hispanic,
right.
Or appeared to be Hispanic, because she did say that to the dispatcher.
She said that. She didn't say black, so I don't
black,
quite know where the guy...
She said Hispanic, but
right.
it's irrelevant. I don't think that race really played a part in it. I think that the officer just responded, and, you know, then once the professor felt as though, you know, the officer should be sent on his way, you know, having proved himself. But I think...
It should have ended right at that point.
Yeah, it should have been done. It should have been. But like I said, I think egos on both sides were clashing. And, you know, officers, there's an arrogance that goes along with authority. And
that's the problem right there. Cops have to know when to turn it off and walk away, and that's what didn't happen this time.
They need to learn sensitivity in that department. But they seem to... There's a certain... It's like a country club. I mean, you see it all the time where they you know, tune people up because they step out of line with them. I mean, you can't say anything to them. I mean, if you do, you'll catch a beating.
Exactly.
If you don't,
that's not right. I've hated bullies all my life, and this is just another instance of it, and I refuse to bow down to them, and that does result in trouble sometimes.
Yeah. But you do have to understand from their point of view. They're there to protect you and to try to help out.
Yeah, but I also think they're there to protect themselves, and they're very well equipped to do that. And it was obvious in this case that there was no threat to them whatsoever, and this didn't have to happen.
Yeah, it was a tit for tat situation whereby the professor was, you know, felt insulted that him being the great academic PhD professor that he was.
I don't think he was thinking that. I think it was just a person in his home after 14 hours flying that just wanted to, you know, relax and not be hassled in his own home.
But the officer had been told that somebody jimmied the door, and the guy did jimmy the door because it was stuck or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you have to be understanding on both sides. I mean,
I would love to hear the dialogue, how it played out. Then we'd know if something was explained clearly, where misunderstandings might have taken place. But, the fact of the matter is, this guy was in his house. He proved that he was in his house.
Yeah, but
I think it
went beyond that, though. I think he was arrested for being uppity with the officer.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly, and you have that right. You can be uppity. You know, this is the period of uppityness.
You can use profanity, but... That doesn't always flush with the arrogance
okay,
of the
Okay, I agree with you there, but that doesn't make it right, and that's why they're wrong, because...
But I think what was far worse was Barack Obama saying anything. He should have left no comment.
I was happy to see somebody in authority get angry at the authorities for a change instead of just blindly following them.
Yeah, but to make it a racial, like it was a racial thing, I think was incorrect. But ultimately, like I said, I think the officers...
The thing is, it is a racial thing because if you know any black people, if you've been black yourself ever, then you know that this kind of racism follows you around everywhere, going into homes, going into stores or schools.
What about overweight people? They have to deal with the same thing, as do midgets.
In another sense,
everybody
yes.
Everybody has certain biases that are inflicted upon them by other people, whether you're ugly or obese.
Yeah, but
you know?
this is something that you're born into, that you live your entire life, and you have to deal with it every single day. Listen, sir, we're out of time, but a fascinating discussion. And
program, thank you.
All right. OTW@2600.com, that's our email address. I want to go out with this song that actually I kind of grew up with. I was in, I think, ninth grade when this came out. It's a Stevie Wonder song, all about racism, and it's something that blew me away on the radio when I first heard it. Actually, the first time I heard it, they faded it before the objectionable part starts. And, of course, that part does have the N-word in it, so... Yeah, OTW@2600.com, living for the city. Good night.
A boy's born in hot damn Mississippi, surrounded by four walls that ain't so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. Yeah. His father works some days for 14 hours, and
Come on, get in that cell, nigger.
God, no.